Sinisterhood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way.
Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
The crime made headlines around the country, destruction and mayhem at a holiday parade. But no one knew the trial would also be chaotic. A self-represented defendant, a judge with endless patience, and a long list of victims hoping they'll see justice. And now, the perpetrator has gotten an attorney and is looking to appeal. This week's episode is The Waukesha Parade Attack Trial with updates.
In the night, your heart fills with dread, probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed, you'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinisterhood.
Well, this was one that folks have asked us to talk more about, cover more on, because at the time it was such a headline-grabbing trial because of the nature of footage, which you'll hear us talk about.
Things like this are just heartbreaking on so many levels. When we covered it as a mini-sode, it was hard to talk about, and, I mean, the updates too, but anytime there's a gathering that is meant to be joyous and kids are there, people of all ages and everything, and just someone destroys it for the sake of destroying. But what a city to rally behind them. And really everyone that we've talked to that's from there said, like, it's brought the city closer. No one ever wants, of course, something like that to happen, but everyone that is from that area is so resilient, and our hearts go out to you because still, I mean, this is still something that, I mean, I don't think you ever get over it, but that still, affects them on a daily basis. Many of the people, especially those that were there.
Definitely. I mean, it shakes you to your core of, and just in general, just going out in any public space. And that's the kind of ripple effects that we see from an incident like this, where even folks who weren't physically injured, it still is a serious wound to see your fellow humans hurting that way. First responders, anybody that jumped in. So this, you'll notice that as you listen to what this originally aired as a mini-sode back in 2022, and now there have been so many updates. So we've got you a second half there at the end, but you'll notice at the top, we're pretty mad. We're pretty, a lot of swear words right up top. So heads up, at the time, it was just barely a year after it happened. Mm-hmm. The trial was less than a year after it happened. So I think that emotional part of it was raw, and just seeing the disrespect, as we'll discuss. And
the trial.
Yes.
Anytime somebody represents themselves, I'm like, what are you doing? But this guy took the cake on idiots to have represented himself.
It's wheels off. It truly is. So we'll get into all of that as well. And like Christy said, we have had people reach out from the area. And if you have not heard on Freaky Friday 95, which aired back in January of this year, there's a firsthand account from our listener, Molly. Her story is called I Was in the 2021 Waukesha Christmas Parade. And it's the very first story in that episode. And it's, still almost 3 years on. It's a wound she deals with that mm-hmm. people in the community deal with. But like you said, it's resilience and bringing them together. So we'll leave you with the 2022 mini-sode and then stick around at the end. And we've got 2 years of updates almost.
Wow, yeah. That. Yes, and we're going to be not too far from where this happened. We are going on tour, if you're listening this today. Mm-hmm. We're in St. Louis tonight.
And tonight, yeah, absolutely. We're starting off on St. Louis on May 15th. And then this weekend, we're going to be in Chicago on the 18th. And we will be in Milwaukee on May 19th. So quite a feeling to be talking about this right before we're going to be around some of the folks in the community.
Last time we went to Milwaukee, such a great town. Everyone there is so nice and welcoming. We can't wait to see all of you. We're going to have a lighter show for everyone. Yes. We're going back on tour. I can't believe we're recording this tonight before we fly. We have a flight in like 6 hours.
So, yeah.
So I'm going to say, man, the show tonight, so great.
Yes.
It's going to be just incredible. But it really is, though. This is a really fun show. It's our Full Moon Energy Tour. We don't release the show on the main feed episode, so you have to come in person to see it. And we've changed it quite a bit since 2023. So even if you saw it then, come on out. Or if you haven't seen it at all, we would love to see you, have you bring a friend. It's everything you love about the show, but it's all centered around the moon, specifically the darker side of the moon. Pink Floyd tried to tell us, but nobody listened. So now we're up there. And what are we talking about, Heather?
Pink Floyd got it right. Well, we're talking about all the things we like to talk about. Conspiracy. We've got a little true crime in there. We got some cryptids. We have just anything that's mysterious, macabre, all of the legends and the lore about the moon. We've combined it in. We have some audience participation segments. We also have city-specific bits that we're going to do. So it's, you know, including heroes from your hometown. So we can't wait to hear how you feel about them. So yeah, we'll see you in St. Louis tonight, Chicago, Milwaukee this weekend, and then Charlotte, Raleigh, Cincy, Cleveland, Toronto, Kansas City, Oklahoma City, San Diego, Phoenix, Las Vegas, and we're going to end it up here in Dallas. So come on out and see us. Go to sinisterhead.com/live shows. And we want to see you in person. It's like part of the connection of this show is the live part
of
it.
We love it.
Yeah. Oh,
we love being on stage. I'm very excited to get back in front of a live audience.
Most definitely. And that's the part we love the most is we're just doing this. Like you said, we're recording it in the dark in our houses. But the true connection of all of this is the feedback from y'all. So we hope to see y'all in person somewhere out there. But in the meantime, buckle up because this trial is a lot. And like I said, you're about to get real angry over the next hour or so.
Yeah.
And then we've got some updates for you after that.
Oh, Heather's already shaking her head with a look. Incensed is the word that comes to mind when I think of this trial.
You know, I mean, watching it, I was like, I have so much respect for the prosecutors and the judge for not just backhanding the shit out of this defendant.
Dude, you know what I hate maybe more than anything? Being interrupted. And the amount of times that this motherfucker interrupts this judge, talks over her.
I know what you're doing, Judge. Talks over her.
I feel like it's like when I'm talking to Ella. I'm just like, what are you doing? Everybody needs to give each other their own time to talk. And then when it's your turn, you can have your chance. But to speak to a judge this way and to her, about her, over her, disrespecting the entire courtroom, to say it's a shit show is being kind.
Yeah. Oh, certainly. And I think there have been judges that we've all watched, you know, whether it's televised trials or whatever, that you're thinking, oh my gosh, this person is full of shit, or they're totally biased, or they're whatever. None of the cases I've been involved in have one side just started yelling at the judge, taking their top off, cursing
challenging
at the judge,
everything, objecting when it's hard to represent yourself and object to stuff when you don't know the law. It's almost as if people should go to school for stuff like this, where they go, I don't know, for like 8 years to learn what to do when you get in a courtroom. And then if you don't, you just say, fuck it, I'm going for it. Some of the dumbest sounding shit will come out of your mouth. But Darrell Brooks doesn't give a fuck. He leans in. He is convinced that he is in the right and everything he says. And even if some of the stuff he says, maybe he is right, it falls on completely deaf ears because he's so unhinged in the way he presents it that everyone is just like, at any second, this guy's going to come after one of us. You're on edge. You're nervous. Like, he's getting removed. How can you possibly pay attention to what's actually this trial is about when he's making a spectacle of it and himself?
And that's exactly the right word for it, is a spectacle. And it's no, he has no respect for the proceedings, for the people, for what happened. And I was like, oh, man. I mean, the we'll get into the, you know, possible sentence, likely sentence. There's a mandatory sentence. When that much is on the line, like you said, there's reasons why people go to school for this. Mm-hmm. I've gone to school for it. I'm practiced. I got licensed in 2015. So 7 years. I just sat through a 10-hour CLE on advanced criminal law in Texas, and I still would not represent myself. Mm-hmm. You just, there are people who dedicate their entire lives to doing it, and there's a reason. I get it. If you're out in the woods and you're choking on something and you need a tracheotomy, maybe your buddy that's there that has a pocket knife could do that. But if you have access to a hospital and medical care, you don't just go, I bet I could do it myself. Mm-mm. There's certain things that I think we should mm-hmm. value, and your freedom, in particularly, granted, the stakes are a bit lower for a defendant as far as asking for a new trial later on, but the record that he has created is so chaotic and so wrong, I don't think that any of his appeals will be successful. And in the meantime, what you've done is just create powerful enemies, because you the prosecution is pissed off and irritated at you because they have the families of the folks that will go into the crime here. They have the families behind them going, please get justice mm-hmm. for us, for either me who was grievously injured or my family member who I lost. So then you have people who are like, I'm going to make it my life's work to make this the cleanest fucking record mm-hmm. so you will never see the light of day again, versus you have a defense attorney and then the prosecutor, they may know each other. It's very common to be friendly across mm-hmm. the bar. You maybe could have gotten a deal. And I'll clarify at the beginning, he is not mentally ill. He's not incompetent. He understands the nature.
He has not been diagnosed.
They checked him out. He's competent to stand mm-hmm. trial. He is not mentally ill. He's an asshole. Whatever he may have, then they can get him help when he's in there. But when it comes down to fundamentally, legally, he's allowed to do this mm-hmm. because he's just an asshole. I hate this guy. I hate him.
Oh, yeah. He's awful. He's a monster. He was found competent to stand trial. I can't imagine that he doesn't have something going on.
He may not
rage issues, bipolar, schizophrenic. I mean, he wasn't diagnosed with anything, but at the very least, he's got intense rage issues to be able to do what he did. And then there's the way he acts in the courtroom, too.
Yeah, and his background, he's been court mandated mm-hmm. to have anger management in the past. Clearly didn't stick.
No. Yeah, he has a record. He had a record before all of this, so.
I'm all for people getting whatever treatment that they need, but it does not absolve you of your assholery mm-hmm. and the mockery that he made of this extremely sensitive. I mean, this is a terrorist attack.
Yeah. It's quite the trial that will be talked about for decades because it was so unique and just off the wheels.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get into it. On November 21st, 2021, the town of Waukesha, Wisconsin, a suburban area outside of Milwaukee, held its 58th annual Christmas parade. The event included performers from local high schools, marching bands, and local politicians celebrating the holiday season for the first time since the pandemic shut down the parade a year earlier. Just before 4:40 p.m., the Dancing Grannies began their march down Main Street, a dance troupe comprised solely of grandmothers. The Dancing Grannies had already performed two routines to the delight of the crowd when a dark red SUV turned an otherwise fun-filled afternoon into chaos.
The descriptions before the SUV shows up is Norman Rockwell.
Oh, the videos depict that. There's kids and adults alike in Santa costumes, dancing and skipping down the street. There's people waving and, you know, from the sides, onlookers watching. The cops are just there to move everybody along. Nothing wild's happening. And then you hear in this video over police, like walkie-talkies, truck northbound coming that way, and you see officers start to like look around what's going on, then you see the truck come into frame and officers just running towards it like, stop, stop. I imagine you're thinking, this person's confused. They don't realize what's going on. Mm-hmm. You don't, at the time, think this is intentional. He's trying to kill as many people as he can right now.
Yeah, you think, oh my gosh, this person must have gotten confused or they're having some sort of medical mm-hmm. episode. They just hit the gas and we're going.
The driver of the SUV broke through the barricade set up by city officials. When he was directed by police officers to stop his vehicle, he ignored their commands and pressed the gas pedal. He collided with the parade and its onlookers, eventually killing 6 people and wounding dozens more. Those who lost their lives that day were 3 members of the Dancing Grannies crew. Tamara Durand, age 52, who was performing with the troupe for the first time that day, dancer Leanna Owen, age 71, and the group's leader and choreographer, Virginia Jenny Sorensen, age 79. The 3 other victims were parade attendees, 81-year-old William Hospel, who was also the spouse of another Dancing Granny, 52-year-old Jane Coolidge, and the youngest victim, 8-year-old Jackson Sparks. Steve Howard, chief of the Waukesha Fire Department, told the New York Times,
I'd liken it to a war zone. Some of our first responders were there with their families. They left their families to treat people.
Children's Hospital, Wisconsin, treated 18 children as a result of the attack, including 3 sets of siblings, according to the New York Times. In total, it was reported that 62 victims were injured that day.
Just mass chaos, mass casualties.
It's so sad. These are the types of things that really, really get to me because it's a family event. You go there with the highest expectations of just fun. It's a fun day out with your family. It's a way you're celebrating the holidays. And this is like the worst possible thing that could happen, and it happens.
Yeah, that you just think, well, you will go to the parade, we'll come home, we'll mm-hmm. wrap presents, we'll do whatever, you know, but not knowing that that's going to be maybe the last time you're there with your spouse, that there were, and a group like the Dancing Grannies, that's, they're really cohesive, they're super tight-knit, they're best friends. I mean, you're not only is it you've lost your friend, but you had to sit there and watch your friend
in front of you. And then the husband of some of them. Yeah. One of the things that has always stuck with me about Sandy Hook is the parents talking about how the presents to their kids were still wrapped under the tree when they had to go back, and just how heartbreaking that is. And to think that these people had the same thing.
Like, what do you even do with them?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's those things that, like, they go back in Jackson's presents, or you were going over to grandma's for Christmas, and now your whole world is upended. And all because somebody was just pissed off.
A selfish asshole on a bad day.
Yeah, or thinking in terms of, I'm going to cause as much damage as I can because of whatever reason.
Whatever I'm mad at or whatever. Just a piece of shit.
The suspect sped away from the scene and was captured by police later that evening. He was identified as 39-year-old Darrell Brooks, out on a $1,000 bail in an unrelated case from 6 days prior, in which he was accused of punching the mother of his child in the face before chasing her to a gas station parking lot where he hit her with his car. Brooks had a lengthy criminal record, including prior arrests for battery, domestic violence, cocaine possession, and resisting arrest all across the state.
If I'm not mistaken, I believe the prosecutor's office has said his release was unusual and should not have happened. They said that given not only the severity of the incident with his girlfriend at the time, which she had visible signs of being hit in the face, there were witnesses from the gas station, and she had the tire treads on her leg. I mean, he hit her with his car. That they said because he had prior DV arrests and because this was DV, he should not have been out. And they said they're doing, and they are at the time of this, they're like, we have to look into what happened because I'm all for, I get it, bail, especially on low level offenses, a first time offense.
That's not low level.
No, I mean,
hitting somebody with
your
car, do you punch him in the face?
And especially not even just a, you know, it was just a random thing and we got in an altercation. It's like a person that you've been injuring before and your intimate partner violence before.
Abuser.
Don't let his ass out. Don't let him out.
No, I feel like we saw that on another case recently where, yeah, I mean, we've seen it with several, even like everybody's talking about Dahmer right now because of the new series that's out. But he fell through the cracks so many times. The cops let him go when he shouldn't have for a multitude of reasons. This is one of those things that had this guy been kept where he was supposed to be kept, these lives would have, they'd still be here.
Truly. I mean, and again, if it's a low level offense, some early on, but this is, you are a repeated domestic mm-hmm. abuser and you have just done it again. I got no sympathy, mm-mm. especially when there's credible evidence at the arrest. Sinisterhood will be right back.
Sinisterhood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way.
Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
I bet you've probably been to the doctor's office in the past few months. I bet you had to hand over personal info, like your insurance, your ID, maybe even your social security number. And I bet you weren't thinking about how your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal information. If any one of them isn't careful, it's a good bet they could accidentally expose your details to hackers and identity theft, putting you at risk. Fortunately, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back, with plans covering up to $3 million for stolen funds and expenses. Don't take chances with your personal info. Help protect it even when it's out of your hands. Save up to 40% your first year with promo code IHEART. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
In the hours leading up to the parade attack, Brooks and his girlfriend were involved in another altercation, reportedly involving a knife. Officials reported that Brooks was not fleeing police at the time of the parade attack, nor did he know anyone attending the parade. Rather, he seemed hell-bent on injuring as many people as possible. Soon reports came of his bizarre social media posts, in which Brooks, who is black, advocated for violence against white and Jewish people, writing that Hitler was right and did the world a favor by killing so many Jewish people. Well, the hits keep on coming as far as what a piece of shit this guy is.
Yeah, and in addition to the injuries and deaths, the murders that he committed at the parade attack, you find out he's also a domestic abuser, and you find out he's anti-Semitic and said Hitler was right.
Yeah, he's a racist and anti-Semite, in addition to all the other terrible things he is.
Yeah, it's a bingo card of all the shittiest right? possible traits.
At this point, it's easier to find a redeeming quality than to list off all of the terrible qualities about him. And so far, I have zero.
Yeah, he didn't take a shit in the courtroom. Spoiler alert. Like, I mean, he didn't, like, stab anyone in the courtroom. Yeah. Like, that's, it's one of those where, like, now the bar is so
yeah,
low.
Exactly. He didn't physically assault the judge. Well, that's the bare minimum because, my God, no one ever should. You yeah. also shouldn't be defiant to them and talk over them and challenge them. I mean, he was talking in a way that if anybody spoke to me that way, you better sit your ass down. But this judge, and this is why, while I play a judge on TV, I am not, although Tommy today told me he wrote my name in for the 300th district judge. Did you too?
I did too.
Shut the
I wrote
fuck
your
up.
Name
did
in.
Y'all both really do
I
this?
I did. And then somebody else, I couldn't take a picture. You can't take a picture with your phone. But also, yeah, I wrote your name in. And then I wonder if enough people did that you're going to show up on the results. Because a listener texted me, a friend of mine who is a listener, who she introduced the show to a friend of hers, texted me today and said, hey, check out this text exchange. And it was from a, I don't know this person, it's just a listener that said, I didn't know who to write in on the judge ballot, so I just wrote in Judge Christie. I hope I spelled it right.
Oh my God. If we could get enough people to write it in to where I am an actual candidate on this ballot, first of all, please don't vote for me. I do not want the responsibility. Tommy told me,
vote.
You don't have to accept it, but it would be fun to have that on the news where I could take a picture of that.
They're like, who is this Christy Wallace that got all these ballots? Yeah, great question. I did vote for you. But like you said, you play one on TV, but her
yes.
demeanor in the courtroom.
And that's why she should be a judge, because she is measured. She is patient. She is kind at times, even while this man is treating her like a piece of shit. She knows her facts. She's playing it cool, and so she doesn't mess anything up, and this guy gets a mistrial. She did everything she needed to do flawlessly.
Yeah, 100%.
Brooks was eventually charged with 76 crimes, including 6 counts of first-degree intentional homicide, which carry with them mandatory life sentences. Despite the high stakes, the closer the case got to trial, the more outlandish the defendant's behavior became. First, he claimed that he was a sovereign citizen. According to the FBI, sovereign citizens are
anti-government extremists who believe that even though they physically reside in this country, they're separate or sovereign from the United States.
They believe that the U.S. government has no authority over them, including institutions like
courts, taxing entities, motor vehicle departments, or law enforcement. Sovereign citizens.
I got some questions. They're exasperated.
They're rough. They're rough to sit through.
Well, here's my question. And these are legitimate questions I have. One, is this a real thing that people can declare?
No, it doesn't work.
Okay.
Spoiler alert, it doesn't work.
Because
nevertheless,
to me, any of these, I imagine this guy has a social security number, he pays bills, he enjoys like utilities and stuff, like lights, mm-hmm. water, shit like that. So if you were privileged enough to enjoy all of those things, driving a car, we know he fucking does that. So clearly he went to the motor vehicle department to get his driver's license. How can you say you're a sovereign citizen and the government has no control over you when you are taking part in the government that is set up in this country?
Yeah, there's not really a lot of logic. It's become a far right wing extremist ideology. It's been around for, a long time, a pretty significant amount of time. It has seen an influx, I would say a post 2016 increase in subscribers to this belief system. I have seen it in court and it doesn't go. Well, I mean, it's like, I don't believe in your jail.
The guy who blew up the water tower.
Oh, him. Yeah, he was one. A friend of mine had one in Houston when he worked with a federal judge in Houston who that was a whole separate thing where he, again, was like, there's fringe on the flag. And because the flag in your courtroom, Your Honor, has fringe on it, that means it's a maritime flag. And I'm not subject to that jurisdiction. And again, you could just go, I don't believe in this. They still put the cuffs on you and take you away. I mean, it's not, you can believe in one hand and shit in the other and you decide which one fills up faster. And another one was trying to sue Hillary Clinton in the federal court that I interned in, trying to sue Hillary Clinton because they thought that she had emailed them saying that they had some money at this bank, but it wasn't really a bank. It was a Shell gas station in Sherman, Texas. But it's a lot of delusion. All that to say, it's a ton of delusion.
And do they think that it's a real thing?
When they show up thinking, I've printed this out from the internet. And there's all these websites that are like these like sovereign citizens. If you're a sovereign citizen and you've been arrested, here's some magic phrases to say. And I'm like, do you think these work? Because they don't.
Yeah, and I think that, like you said, it's a far right-wing thing. And when you get over there into, like, QAnon and stuff like that, a lot of times those people are too far gone to reason with or understand, like, these beliefs are ludicrous. None of this makes sense. It's not a real thing. But they're too far gone. And I think that's, like, this guy, Darrell. Or maybe he's just, like, scouring the internet thinking, what could I possibly do to get out of this? And he comes across this on some website.
Well, my thing is, like, if you thought this worked, don't you think everybody would do it?
Right.
And we'd have no one in jail? Like,
wouldn't we all be like, no, I don't, this doesn't apply to me. I don't have to abide by the rules. That's not the society that we've set up, you idiot.
No, and you can't just go, I'm not going to pay taxes. Again, you can try. Boy, you could try. And it's like with QAnon or this, they read it and they want to believe it so badly that they really don't listen to any reason mm-hmm. until the judge goes, nah, not in my court.
Yeah, that's the thing. You don't have to listen to reason. You do have to go where the bailiff that handcuffs you takes you, and that's to jail.
Once you can believe them cuffs clicking
mm-hmm,
on you.
Mm-hmm. Brooks was prohibited from presenting his sovereign citizen defense in the weeks leading up to the trial, with the judge ruling that it lacked legal merit. He initially wanted to plead not guilty by reason of insanity, but later changed his plea to just not guilty. He also decided to fire his attorneys less than 2 weeks before the trial was scheduled to begin. The court-appointed defense counsel made it clear that they did not wish to withdraw, but rather that their client was insisting on it.
And there was even a really sad letter from the district attorney's office to the victims and survivors' families and saying, we think he's trying to delay this. We're not going to let this happen. We are going to do our best to keep this. The families
this
were
was
very
from the
insistent.
Defense?
No, the district attorney's office
gotcha. Okay.
Wrote to the families and said, listen, we see this happening. They also quoted the defense attorneys and said, we talked to the defense attorneys. They don't want to quit. Mm-hmm. They really do want to do a trial. Mm-hmm. Fair. A good defense attorney is worth their weight mm-hmm. in gold. I mean, they want to follow the rules. They want to make sure that the state's following their rules. They want to give the best possible defense. Even their client's a piece of shit asshole like this guy. You go, well, we don't want his rights to be trampled on. And to see their client behaving in such a fashion that they can't stop it and that it is going to serve, well, one would think it might serve to delay justice to these people that so badly deserve it. You got to say as a defense mm-hmm. attorney, I'm not trying to withdraw, but I honestly have to. He's fired
yeah.
me. I can't stay.
And if you're found competent to stand trial, then it is your right to represent yourself as stupid as it is.
Yeah, you got a right, but not the ability,
yeah.
turns
yeah,
out.
Yeah, but you do have the right. When he asked for his attorneys to be dismissed, Judge Giroux gave him a warning, saying,
so if you're allowed to represent yourself in this case, sir, you will not have attorneys assisting you. If I let them withdraw, they are gone from this case. Do you understand that?
Brooks responded, saying,
I think I'll probably be better served representing myself.
Brooks had been found competent to stand trial, so he was allowed to opt for self-representation.
If you can, if you are indigent enough to be appointed defense counsel, take the appointed defense
yeah.
counsel.
Yeah, this speaks a lot to his whole personality, that he thinks he would do a better job representing himself than two attorneys, that's what they do for a living. But he's got it in his head that he's smarter than everybody, that... He throughout the trial, he has just this air of a chip on his shoulder that he's been wronged by so many people that nobody understands him. He doesn't feel heard or seen is the impression I get. But at the same time, he is not well spoken. He can't get a cohesive thought together. So. Mm-mm. No one is going to listen to someone like that and take them seriously.
Yeah, it would be one thing, you know, if you had somebody with a modicum of reading comprehension.
Yeah.
I mean, eventually towards the end of the trial, it's as if he found a list of legal phrases
yeah.
online and just started shouting
in the
them in various
closing
ways.
Arguments. He's very, he's calmer. You can tell he looked up some legal things to throw out there for sure, but he doesn't know what they mean.
Not at all.
Mm-mm. It turned out Brooks was not better served representing himself. Throughout the course of the trial, he interrupted opposing counsel, argued with the judge, argued with the witnesses, failed at nearly every objection, was unable to present a cogent legal argument, and tried to refuse court-mandated COVID testing. He chose to wear a jail jumpsuit for a period of the trial, despite the advice of the judge to change into street clothes in order to shield jurors from the fact that Brooks was in custody and to help him appear more respectable for the jury. Brooks spent several days in a bright orange t-shirt and at one point even removed his shirt and paced back and forth completely shirtless while muted in another courtroom. Brooks eventually agreed to change into street clothes.
And a lot of his behaviors, I wonder at the beginning if he thought, well, if I act wacky enough, mm-hmm. they're going to think I'm crazy and either declare a mistrial or something else. But they did not abide that. And because of his subsequent behavior, we know it was an act. He was putting on. He was just being an asshole. And to this, the exchange, well, the COVID testing, he was like, I'm not doing it. And she said, well, I can give you the swab and you can swab yourself, or these two giant guards are going to sit your ass down and swab you. And he's like, I'm not doing it. And they sat him down and swabbed him. They're not hurting him. It's not mm-hmm. like we're going to extract your teeth. It's like, for the safety of everybody in this
yeah.
room, let us, you know, swab you. But the whole back and forth about the jumpsuit, he's like, everybody knows I'm in jail. She goes, well, you don't know that. And we conducted jury selection in order to find unbiased jurors who are not as familiar with this case. They might not recognize you. They might not know the facts.
And
he's like,
does she have to do that? Because that seems like a nice thing to. She's saying to him, like, look, I'm trying to help you out here, buddy.
She gave him like every chance. And she said, I'm giving you this opportunity. We'll pause the proceedings. We don't have to start yet. You can go put on, we have street clothes for you ready. And he's like, no, I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing. Well, then I think he realized it does look bad. Yes. 'Cause you do. I mean, and that's why courts offer, because you're innocent until proven guilty, right? They offer the defendant the opportunity to wear street clothes, look respectable, not be shackled as much as normal. And so again, she was going above and beyond extending, because he said, no, I'm good. And she's like, just to be sure, mm-hmm. these are some reasons why you might want to reconsider. And she did not have to do that. And he still was like, go fuck yourself. The footage of him, yeah, like stripping off his clothes and pacing back and forth, to me, it looked like acting, like when we watched that, I believe it was the interrogation of the Parkland shooter. Mm-hmm. Where you can, it's like they're watching the camera, mm-hmm. like, oh, are they watching me? And trying to act weird mm-hmm. only when someone's watching. Mm-hmm. It's like a little kid. Like, I'm crying. Are you looking at me? Okay, yeah. Now I'm crying.
Doing it for attention, for sure. Mm-hmm. Was his defense, because this was something that I had trouble finding, because he was just yelling throughout most of the trial. He's saying he didn't mean to hit anybody. He admits, I mean, you can't deny it. He's driving the car. But he's saying, I was trying to honk. I was trying to let people know that I was coming. And the cops on the stand are like, nope. We're watching this whole video. Everybody's watching. If it happened, nobody hears any honking. There was never any honking, like trying to warn people that he was coming down the street. So he says it was an accident that he ran over people. Is that what he's saying?
His defense changed. It shouldn't shock anyone to know he did not have a cohesive, thoughtful legal argument for which he was prepared to present. And it was kind of like every day he showed up, he thought, okay, today I'm going to do this. Today I'm going to do this.
Just spaghetti at the wall method.
It's very spaghetti at the wall. And I think like something like that, that's so stupid that if you argue that, there's footage of you mm-hmm. with audio mm-hmm. and you're not honking. Like, it's something that's demonstrably false. It's very, to me, it's very stupid. But again, it was spaghetti at the wall.
Yeah. Still, Durrell was unwilling to stop his outburst. He took to shouting at some points of the trial, complaining about supposed violations of his constitutional rights. Throughout it all, Judge Jennifer Durrell maintained her composure and preserved the record in order to protect the proceedings from a later challenge on appeal. The judge even offered Brooks citations to statutes and case law to support her rulings and informed him of the proper channels through which he could complain about any mistreatment.
And that's another one. He's going, you're trampling on my constitutional rights. And she's like, okay, well, if you're being mistreated in the facility, we're going to make sure that you have the phone number where you can report that. We're going to make sure that you have everything that you need. And he's like, she's like, okay, you know, I'm going to send you out of the courtroom. Well, why can you do that? And she said, oh, well, because it's the case of Illinois versus Smith or whatever. And so she was ready on the ball. Her clerks had prepared her ready on the ball for any of his arguments. And of course, he didn't have anything to respond to because he's not a lawyer.
No, that's the thing, is it doesn't take much to shut him down, because it's hard to argue when you don't know the rules or the law or mm-hmm. what you're even arguing about. There's only so much you can look up on Wikipedia.
Yeah, and he didn't have it with him in the courtroom, so it's like he's not prepared for that. And for her to respond with, oh, well, there's case law supporting what I've done. What's your argument? Well, I don't have one. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, next.
Well, then, fuck off. Yeah. But she, goddamn, you know, she went home every night and was just like, oh, my God, just banged her head against a wall for several hours before she just went to bed. Yeah, just turned her garage into a rage room. My God.
You have to. Sinisterhood will be right back.
Sinisterhood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way.
Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
I bet you've probably been to the doctor's office in the past few months. I bet you had to hand over personal info, like your insurance, your ID, maybe even your social security number. And I bet you weren't thinking about how your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal information. If any one of them isn't careful, it's a good bet they could accidentally expose your details to hackers and identity theft, putting you at risk. Fortunately, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. with plans covering up to $3 million for stolen funds and expenses. Don't take chances with your personal info. Help protect it even when it's out of your hands. Save up to 40% your first year with promo code IHEART. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Judge Giroux also advised Brooks that his continued interruptions would result in him forfeiting his right to be in the courtroom. Brooks did not heed her advice and was removed from the courtroom repeatedly after shouting out. He was allowed to watch the trial remotely from another room with his mic muted and was given an objection sign and a pad of paper to communicate. So much of this, I wonder, were these rules in place before, or is a lot of this like, well, I guess we're going to move him to this other room and just give him a sign that says objection because you're just figuring it out on the fly since it's so unusual?
I don't know about her courtroom specifically, but there have been cases where the defendant is like so disruptive, or if the defendant is like menacing a witness and is like, I'll kill you, making hand gestures, something to like keep them separate. Mm-hmm. But you do have the right to, if you want to participate in the proceedings, to be there. It just, technology is such that you can participate in the other room by watching and listening, and you can wave your little hand if you have an objection, but we don't have to hear you muttering the whole entire time. And objecting to every single word that's not even close.
Mm-hmm. Just, I appreciate that they were like, you can throw your temper tantrums. We're not going to react to them, and it's certainly not going to get you out of anything or get you special treatment. So we will just work around you. Honestly, it's kind of how you have to communicate with kids a lot. It's like, I'm going to give you these two options. You can pick whichever one it is, but the end result is going to be what I want. But no, also, I mean, like throw shut your up fucking you temper tantrum, but you're not going to get your way because of this.
Not at all. No, you shut up or leave. Mm-hmm. And you see, man, at one point, there's a clip where the prosecutors is sitting there and he's made a legal argument, a cogent legal argument, and the judge is, you know, responding, and Brooks is just da 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 da, and you just see the DA, and he's like,
yeah,
and just like a deep breath, and is like, okay, Your Honor. And it's one of those where I told Paris, I said, it'd be like if you said, okay, let's play a game of basketball, and then someone just pulls out a pair of nunchucks and starts swinging them at you, and you're like, this, where in the rules does it talk about what to do when they pull out nunchucks? And you're like, it's not in there.
No.
You're like, okay, well, it's probably a foul.
Yeah, baptism by fire. You're just figuring it out on the fly. And then now this is a thing that going forward, if you ever encounter this, I guess you know what to do. When he was allowed in the courtroom, Brooks attempted to object to several answers by one victim, who he called during his defense. When Judge Giroux overruled his many incorrect objections, Brooks muttered,
"You overrule every objection."
The judge instructed,
"The jury will disregard the additional commentary made by Mr. Brooks at this time."
Brooks continued, saying,
"Judicial misconduct at its finest."
During the cross-examination of the victim, who Brooks called, Brooks muttered into the microphone nearly the entire time, saying things like,
"I see what y'all are trying to do." And this was sad because it was a person who he'd hit with his car so forcefully that it broke the man's leg. The man had to have several surgeries.
And was this also a victim of the parade?
Yep. And he called him during his defense, which is dumb and a bad idea and not necessary.
What did he think was going to happen?
To me, it looks like he grabbed a list of names and pointed at one and picked him. This gentleman is not a native English speaker, so they had to have a translator. So it's even more chaotic because you have now on redirect, which you're allowed to, if you're on, I'm sorry, not redirect, on cross-examination. So Brooks calls him. So that would be, he gets to question him first. Then this is on cross-examination by the state. And she's like, you can lead them in cross-exam. And he's like, objection, that's leading. Okay, she's allowed to do that. Mm-hmm. Or he'd go, she said, were you injured in the attack? And so the guy has to translate in Spanish. The guy translates back. And then he says, yes. And then she says, did you have to have surgery? And he's like, objection, ask and answered. No, it isn't. That's two separate questions. She's allowed to ask all these questions. So then it was just utter chaos because the state's attorney would ask a question. The translator would translate. While the translator's translating, Brooks is objecting. The judge is saying overruled. The victim is listening to the translator. The translator is having to say, she asked you this. He objected. Mm-hmm. Now the judge is saying this. And I see him pointing and the translator was on his ball. I mean, he was like this. But this man has been victimized enough. He's mm-hmm. been run over by a car doing nothing more than going to see a parade. And now his attacker has drug him into court and is now hassling him mm-hmm. on the stand. As for something very, it was very minor. It's not like he was like, that's the man that ran me over. He was like, yeah, I had to have surgery. Yeah, I'm in constant pain every day. Yeah,
Why did Brooks call him? What questions did he ask?
He was mostly wanting to be combative. And based on his questions, which were just like, were you there kind of things, I don't think that he had any legal reasoning. Yeah. I think he pulled out a list of victims and pointed at one.
Damn. Judge Giroux admonished the defendant each time and was frequently forced to take breaks and excuse the jury based on Brooks's unruly and inappropriate conduct. When Judge Giroux sent the jury out of the room, Brooks continued his mutterings, accusing the judge of trying to fix the trial and keep the jury from hearing the truth. In an effort to let Brooks back in her room, Judge Giroux referred to the rules of court and asked Brooks whether he would agree to respect the decorum of the court. Brooks interrupted the judge multiple times as she tried allowing him back in, unable to keep quiet for the duration of her questions. I'm telling you, the patience this woman has, I cannot deal with people talking over me or interrupting me. It sends me. So this, I would have lost my ever-loving mind.
And she's doing exactly what you would expect. She's like, Mr. Brooks, now that we're coming back from this break, I would like to let you back in the courtroom a few things. And he's like, you don't even know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. What are you even going to do? You just don't want the jury to hear the truth. And meanwhile, she's trying to really tell him, these are the ways I could let you in. Mm-hmm. Can't stop himself. He just can't stop himself.
No, he's one of those people that he's not even hearing what she's saying. He is just in fight mode. And it's just insult. Talking to hear yourself talk, he's not even absorbing like what's going on.
And it's a significant amount of delusion to think, oh, well, if I argue with her enough, she'll agree with me. And I think he's a convicted domestic violence, domestic abuser, he's probably used to getting his way mm-hmm. and bullying women. And the fact that this judge was a woman, I don't think should be unaddressed. Mm-hmm. That I think he thought he could talk over her, yell at her, and no, you cannot. Mm-mm. She sends your ass out of the room.
Mm-mm. Yeah, he's a manipulator. He's used to getting his way. He's used to beating people down until they finally just acquiesce. But mm-hmm. you done fucked up in Judge Giroux's courtroom. It doesn't fly there.
Nope.
On October 26, 2022, Darrell E. Brooks was convicted on all 76 charges, including 6 counts of first-degree intentional homicide. As each verdict was read, Brooks put his face in his hands and dropped his head lower and lower. After the conclusion of the trial, Judge Jennifer Giroux received more than 300 cards, letters, and emails from people across the country praising how she handled Brooks and the entire trial.
Yeah, when they give the first verdict, he's kind of okay. Mm-hmm. I'm listening. Second, down a little bit further.
It's just Homer Simpson going back into the bushes
on the floor.
The amount of paper she has in her hand, it is. I mean, the stack. I think they had I saw something that they had 150 different jury instructions they had to go through.
Yeah,
I mean, it was a ton of paperwork and stuff they had to go through.
Yeah, for that many charges, and yeah, you say probably each charge may have a couple of questions, for each element of each charge. You know, those jurors were like, yes, 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 yes,
I think
yes.
They deliberated for 3 hours, and that was probably just to make sure, okay, we're all getting our ducks in a row, and to go through all that paperwork. I can't imagine anybody was like, well, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe he didn't intend to. It's like, no, he knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah.
You're right. They probably were like, let's make sure we do this completely right because we don't want to be the ones mm-hmm. to mess this up. But what he's done is put himself at a grave disadvantage for any reasonable doubt. Like, if you would have had a good attorney, maybe they could have gotten something in that mm-hmm. could have said that, whatever possible argument. But he just decided that he was some genius, LOL. And this is, so you didn't give them anything to consider, mm-hmm. honestly.
Survivors of the attack were given a chance to respond to the verdict in a press conference that followed. One survivor said,
"Justice has been served today."
Each victim thanked the first responders who came to their aid, the prosecutors who saw the trial through, and Judge Jennifer Giroux. District Attorney Susan Opper said,
It's obviously quite satisfying that Mr. Brooks has been found guilty and been held accountable for his actions. As many of these victims have said, this is a joyous day for that reason. It's also the point where we hope that everyone can move on from.
When asked what it was like going up against Brooks defending himself, Opper said,
"As far as handling the actual court proceedings, we felt very, very offended by his behavior, his disrespect of the court. That was intentional on his part. We truly believe that. He did everything he can except claim the dog ate his homework. He tried to change this into his story, and we just kept redirecting it back to the real focus here. Our families, our victims, our community, and his responsibility for this destruction."
Opper also related the legal difficulties of going against someone so out of control, saying at the press conference,
"Legally, it changed our strategy. If there is an appeal, he can make a mistake in the courtroom and get a new trial, and we have to pay the price for that, we the state and we the victims. So it changed our strategy in that we had to make sure, and Judge Durow did as well, that the record was thorough, very complete, and we didn't miss anything."
Is this a type of trial, or any trial, do the judge and the prosecution talk a lot? I guess the judge is supposed to be unbiased. But in this case, would the judge and the prosecution kind of like team up because it's so wild what's going on?
Well, you wouldn't want to have any appearance of any type of impropriety, because you don't want, if he is smart enough to get an appellate counsel who's like, "Well, we see here that this happened and this happened." It seemed like every time she was addressing the attorneys on the state side, he was in the room or he was listening in on Zoom or whatever, that it was above board, totally done right. However, I think what he did whenever he came in, like he thought he was going to just act all wacky and either get a mistrial or act all wacky and think he's going to get a new trial later on appeal, you have then created in both the mind of the judge, who doesn't want to botch this because it's now being watched by everybody, Law and Crime was streaming it live, and from the prosecutors who are talking with the survivors and the victims' families, you've now created two camps of people who are like, "We've crossed every T, we've dotted every I, this is going to be so airtight and so not appealable." And prosecutors, they know what type of things can be challenged on appeal, and just making sure you shore that up, you have it in the record that if there was some sort of objection that he made it, or that he, I doubt it. The thing about him not knowing objections is the purpose of an objection during trial is to preserve an error for appeal, that you say, "This thing happened in court. I object, Your Honor, because of this case law, you're doing this wrong." And the judge says, "Overruled." And you go, "All right, I can kind of coast because I'm going to get this overturned on appeal." He was just shouting objection at anything. So in that case, maybe he did object to something properly, but I highly doubt it, because you do have now these very dedicated people both on the bench and then across the bar, like on the other side of the bar, going, "Oh no, we're going to respond thoroughly." And that's why I think it was very important that she took him very seriously. Mm-hmm. The prosecutors took him very seriously. They were pissed off. You could tell they were fucking irritated.
Oh yeah.
But they responded thoroughly, properly, and very seriously to everything he did, because they were making a record. And I don't think he got that. I think he's like, "Well, I'll just fuck around and get a do-over later. That's what appeals are." And it's like, no, you have to have. And what you've also just done, you fucking idiot, one of the easiest doors to open on appeal is ineffective assistance of counsel. Mm-hmm. And you can't claim it on yourself.
No.
So he should have had those attorneys, prayed to the Lord that his antics would distract them, that they fuck something up, and that he could get appellate counsel and get another bite at the apple. But in representing himself, he's closed one of the most effective doors of appeal that he could have gone through. And it's like, that is why you don't represent yourself. Mm-mm.
The hubris but of man.
Hopefully that's why he'll never see the sun again.
Mm-hmm. Brooks has said he plans to appeal. He remains in custody pending sentencing. Each count of first-degree intentional homicide carries with it a mandatory life sentence. It is expected that around 40 victims will speak at the hearing, which is set for November 15th, just 6 days before the one-year anniversary of the attack.
And the families have made it clear they wanted the trial to be done in 2022. They were like, "Don't drag this out." And when he first tried to fire his attorneys, thinking they were going to have to hire someone else and they're going to have to get up to speed, they were going to have to push the trial to 2023. So he did the families a favor, too, at least.
Well, there you go. At least he could do.
Sinisterhood will be right back. Sinisterhood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way.
Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
I bet you've probably been to the doctor's office in the past few months. I bet you had to hand over personal info, like your insurance, your ID, maybe even your social security number. And I bet you weren't thinking about how your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal information. If any one of them isn't careful, it's a good bet they could accidentally expose your details to hackers and identity theft, putting you at risk. Fortunately, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back, with plans covering up to $3 million for stolen funds and expenses. Don't take chances with your personal info. Help protect it even when it's out of your hands. Save up to 40% your first year with promo code IHEART. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Jan Kwiatkowski, a leader of the Dancing Grannies, which lost three members and a volunteer in the attack, described what the group was doing to move on. Its first public performance following the attack was the St. Patrick's Day event in March of 2022. She told NPR,
"Nobody, especially the grannies who were there, knew exactly how it would feel at that moment. As a group, we talked about how do we support each other through this. The flip side was, quite honestly, the joy of just dancing together again and going, we are back and we are going to do this and we are going to get through."
Well, so what do we think?
Oh, grannies.
That's sweet, so grannies. Sweet that, yeah.
They're trying to stick together.
The whole thing is, I mean, like I said, any of these things where it's like, completely careless, thoughtless, reckless for the intention of hurting someone, and you're just out there trying to enjoy a nice day with your family. Those are the ones that hit the hardest for me.
Yeah, it's the crime itself is heinous, and then I think the indignity and the way that he treated this, like a show, like Sue Opper said, like he was trying to make it about himself. He was like trying to introduce irrelevant evidence about himself, his life. He was trying to litigate old issues with his girlfriend, mm-hmm. the current issue with his girlfriend, and they were just like, nope, shut it down. This is not about you. This is about the lives that you ruined. It's about the community you destroyed. So I am, I think we're a fair and balanced show here. We like to talk about the wrongs of the justice system, the rights of the justice system, and I think everybody is entitled to a good defense, and man, this guy really screwed himself out of that.
Yep, sure did. He called his girlfriend, the one that he had the argument with and had hit with his car also, and then tried to say that she wasn't a credible witness because she was a bad parent. And one of the district attorneys was like, if we're going to bring that up, then we're also going to bring up how he doesn't live with her and his child. He doesn't live with any of the other children he's fathered. In fact, he impregnated this woman that he's abused when she was a minor. And he was convicted on statutory sexual luring or something, or persuasiveness or something. He starts losing his mind. You don't even know what you're talking about. Did you know that she told me she was 18? Okay, now we sound like we're getting into a fight at a bar. This is just embarrassing now.
Yeah. And on the record, you've just said that you did have sex with a minor, not understanding it's a strict liability offense. So it doesn't matter what she told. She could have told you she was 100 years old. And you're like, I'm Benjamin Buttoning. I'm so old. It doesn't matter what they tell you. It's a child. Mm-hmm. Don't have sex with a child. Mm-mm. Don't impregnate a child, because then that's evidence of your crime. And then, yeah, like you said, he thought, well, I'll just argue my way out of this one. But the way that he speaks, you can tell his, I don't know if his entire life, but a good chunk of his adult life, he is bullied, got away with things, manipulated. And it just, sadly, all of these people had to lose their lives for this to happen, to get him off the fucking street and get him out of this poor woman's life, who he keeps hitting her, running her over with her car, chasing her with a knife. Like, for her sake, I hope he does get sentenced six life sentences or whatever. So she does not have to be in fear anymore of him.
No. And the district attorney even said, even if all of this was true, that she's a bad mom, that doesn't make her not a credible witness. Those two things don't even go hand in hand. And this was all, the jury wasn't even in there when this happened. Another thing he doesn't know is if, like, if you want to introduce this, go right ahead. But guess what we're going to be introducing? And they're trying to give him, like, an out. Like, if you want to do this, go ahead. But here's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
You make the door. You make the decision.
And that's what happened with that, the very wild sovereign citizen I saw in that courtroom who started bringing certain things up that you could just see the U.S. attorney was like, excellent, because you're like, you don't know what you don't know. And you don't know that you just stepped on a landmine and you've just created a much bigger problem for yourself. But yeah, I think ranting and raving that she told me she was 18. Not that you could ever really look good after the horrible crimes you committed. But like we said, this is like a shitty person bingo. And he just, and he also impregnated a minor. Mm-hmm. Add that one to the list. In addition to Hitler was right. And also several murders he committed in the light of day. So he's just, we talked about not having the death penalty and the Menendez brothers, and maybe by the grace of God, this in jail, he'll be cured of his perpetual assholiness. He'll become a counselor. He'll help the youth. I don't know. Probably not.
No, probably not. He's going to be kept off the streets, hopefully, from hurting anybody else, I think, the best we can get.
Yeah, hurting anybody else, and especially, you know, the families knowing that not only did he do this egregious act, but then the mockery he made, while that was another insult to injury, he at least didn't succeed in the mockery.
Yes, no.
And I think that's why you take that on as the prosecutor and the judge of, like, we can't fail them.
No, and they did a great job. This is a time when we see the justice system work the way it should, and the jury did absolutely the right thing, too. Well, it'll be interesting to see what the sentencing is. I don't imagine this guy's going to see the light of day again.
I hope that the hearing, though, on November 15th, that he is kept quiet. Oh. They might have to put him in another room. Mm-hmm. But to where it said around 40 victims, every single one of these people deserve to have their voice heard and deserve to look him in the eye and say what he was going to say. I don't care if they've put duct tape over his mouth.
Put him in another room, mute his mic, and
turn the volume all the way up.
Yeah, and he just has to sit there and listen to him, and he can't say a thing. Well, thank you all so much for supporting the Patreon and listening to this much minisode. We had a lot of people write in. Well, that is the original minisode that aired back in 2022. We did a True Crime Headlines a while after that gave some updates, but we have many, many more to give you right now. The sentencing hearing finally happened on November 17th, 2022. Nearly 2 years after the 2021 Waukesha parade attack, Daryl Brooks was sentenced. The hearing spanned 2 days, during which dozens of survivors and victims' family members made statements in court. The court also presented written statements from some victims, including some of the victims who were children.
And that was really powerful to see a victim impact statement projected in just the tiny handwriting that it was in. Oh, yeah. You know.
Those are always, it's in the name, a victim impact statement. They are very impactful. And to see a child that saw firsthand, you know, I mean, people's lives ended right in front of them. Mm-hmm. And to see how not only does it affect them, of course, right now, but I mean, that's something you have with you for the rest of your life.
Yeah. And it just says, like, I remember, you know, or like, you hurt my leg or you did this. I mean, it is, that's the juxtaposition between the show he really put on and the true harm that was happened.
Judge Jennifer Doro sentenced him to serve a life sentence without the possibility of parole for each of the first-degree homicide counts, with these sentences to run consecutively. When a defendant is ordered to serve consecutive sentences, it means he must serve time for each separate offense. Put otherwise, a defendant must finish the first sentence before serving a sentence for the other crime.
We discussed this very briefly about, you know, 5 minutes or so on True Crime Headlines, but to clarify, he's never getting out. I mean, if you have a life sentence to serve and you can't start your next one until you finish the first one, and the first sentence is life without parole, period. There it is.
Yeah. I mean, I guess not only because you have to issue the sentence for each appropriate charge, but also I think it's a message that, like, what you did is so atrocious that is it, you know,
necessary from a biological standpoint. Like, obviously, he's going to die in prison, but it's like, yeah, keep stacking those one on top of each other just in case some loophole comes around that there's, like, everything thrown at him on the books possible.
That's a good way to put it, too, of, like, in case there is some sort of loophole, it's like belt and suspenders you have.
Mm-hmm.
You have that backup.
In addition to the life sentences, Judge Doro sentenced Brooks to 17 and a half years for each of the 61 counts of first degree recklessly endangering safety with the use of a dangerous weapon. This added up to more than 700 years on top of the life sentences without parole. Absent an appeal, Brooks will effectively die in jail. He was also ordered to pay $170,000 in restitution, including over $124,000 for crime victim compensation.
And that's something, you know, maybe you don't think about too much, but that is a very important part of the sentence is the restitution, because you do have, not just for the victims who lost their family members, there is a financial impact for everybody on this. Tons of medical bills, rehabilitation. You know, it's going to be a long road. Even I'm sure some of them are still recovering that mm-hmm. now they and their insurance companies, they all have to shoulder the burden because of this person's action.
Missing work because mm-hmm. you were injured or you're traumatized. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, if you're physically injured, emotionally damaged, there's a lot of – I'm honestly of the mind that that is very low.
Yeah, truly.
I think it should be way higher than that. But – he doesn't have money anyway, so, but still, again, like a statement.
Just in case, too.
Yeah. During the emotionally charged hearing, Brooks's family members attempted to bring his mental health into question. His grandmother, Mary Edwards, told the judge that Brooks was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and it was that disorder that caused him to drive through the crowd. His mother echoed those sentiments, with Brooks's brother also stating a wish that his brother could get mental health treatment.
Now, in the minisode, you were saying, you know, maybe he was diagnosed with something, even if he's found mentally competent to stand trial. And it sounds like you're right that his grandmother said he's diagnosed with bipolar disorder. But our patron, one of our patrons that commented when we originally posted this, Patty, who has experience in this field of declaring people competent to stand trial, was helped clarify that competent to stand trial doesn't mean you're totally free of all mental illness. It means that you're free of any mental illness that confuses you or means that you don't, you know, you don't appreciate the nature of your actions.
Yes, you wouldn't be able to distinguish between right and wrong at the time of the crime.
Mm-hmm. And she also brought up, which makes sense, that, you know, evaluations might not be completely holistic because most of the time those who are evaluating really don't have time to do much more than just a single meeting, maybe two meetings with the defendant,
mm-hmm.
you know, something to get a general idea of it, but they're not going to be able to, you know, essentially treat them for their mental health issues or even diagnose them beyond just something kind of obvious or facial. So
mm-hmm.
I'm sure his family is the other side of suffering. Yep. You know, there's victims in his extended circle as well. And they were just trying to advocate for the person they loved. Sure.
However, Judge Doro cited opinions from four mental health evaluations, stating that Brooks understood the difference between right and wrong, the key to competence. She noted his lack of remorse or empathy, saying,
"Do the mentally ill sometimes commit atrocious crimes? They do. This is not one of those situations. There are many times good people do bad things, but there are times when evil people do bad things."
Brooks vowed that he would appeal, and he filed a handwritten motion after the trial to do just that. In his motion, he claimed,
"There are clear issues of the law and legal facts
at issue in his case." He asked for representation from the Wisconsin State Public Defender's Office with his appellate efforts. One legal expert, Julius Kim, was interviewed by Fox 6 News and suggested that competency may be an issue in this case. Kim clarified,
"One thing that kind of stands out in my mind might be the notion of whether Daryl Brooks was competent not to stand trial, but competent to represent himself."
However, under Wisconsin state law, because Brooks was found competent, he had the right to represent himself.
And that's something else that our patron, Patty, brought up, was that competent to stand trial is not the same as competent to represent yourself in all states. But it's my understanding under Wisconsin state law that there's not a different distinction. And because
if you're competent to do one, you're competent to do the other. And if you want to get up there and act like you know shit about anything, you know what? I'm not mad about it, because I think he did himself a total disservice, but it also showed everybody just how unhinged this person was. And I mean, if you already didn't like him after watching the trial, I mean, there was just no redeeming qualities about him. He took something that he could have said, I'm so sorry, this was horrible, I'm so remorseful for everything. But instead, he just made a mockery of the court and wasted everybody's time.
Yeah, and further victimized all the people that were there that then had to show up either in the gallery or to actually testify and face him and to behave that way.
Other experts like Thomas Grieve, a former prosecutor turned defense attorney in Madison, told the AP it seemed unlikely there were appealable issues, saying,
I'm unaware of any issues that Doro has created or anything like that. I think the judge has done a fantastic job of patiently addressing all of Mr. Brooks's issues, which seem to have no end. He's gotten what he wanted. He's made his bed and tucked himself into it throughout this entire process. Now he's facing the consequences of it.
She had the patience of a saint. I mean, to, and she had to, because otherwise, you know, I mean, but she like followed all of the rules to make sure that nothing was going to get thrown out because of her behavior.
Yeah, truly. I mean, she really seemed like putting aside that personal emotion of like, I am being so disrespected right now. I'm so irritated on the family's behalf right now, on the court's behalf right now. And to be able to swallow that and be the calm waters that she was throughout. And the real focus is always, what are appealable issues? Did he create a record that would support those appealable issues? That's why it's so important to have an attorney at the trial stage, because you have to actually object to things properly, and then the judge has to overrule them. And then that way, later in your appeal, you're like, I should have had this right. I objected to it. I brought it to the court's attention. They said no. And then this, so you, that's why he should have never, ever represented himself. But I have a suspicion, and I don't know how his appellate attorney would even address this, but I have a suspicion that he was putting on a big show. I think he was trying to seem incompetent, trying to seem totally unhinged, off the wall, so that he could later think he could say, well, I couldn't stand trial. I was incompetent. Mm-hmm. But when you have four evaluators, I think that's going to weigh against that.
Agreed. In April of 2023, the state asked Judge Doro to increase the amount of restitution Brooks had to pay. The judge agreed, and the total amount Brooks owes increased to $134,000 to the crime victims, for a total of $180,000. The judge acknowledged that Brooks was unlikely to pay the amount now, but she wanted to be sure the victims were covered in case his financial situation changed, saying,
there is absolutely no doubt in my mind that the possibility exists for Mr. Brooks at some point in the future to possibly profit from a book deal or a made-for-TV movie.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
And that's, I mean, I still don't think $180,000 is enough. I mean, when you think of all of the people that were affected, and then you got to parse that out, I mean, that really breaks down to very little for each family member or victim. And I would not be surprised in the least if a book deal, a made-for-TV movie, maybe a couple of them come out of this for sure.
Yeah, I hope that if it's focused on the victims and the survivors and the city and the resilience of the city, and not on him and his attention that he obviously wanted.
Yeah. A private attorney, Michael Covey, was appointed to represent Brooks in January of 2023 through a deal with the Wisconsin Public Defender's Office. The extensive trial records took months to prepare. Meanwhile, Brooks was in court a few more times. First in June, he was scheduled to go to trial on the charges of running over the mother of his child with an SUV before the parade attack. She told police the couple was fighting minutes before Brooks drove through the crowd. When she refused to get into his vehicle, he gave her a black eye and a split lip, hitting her while they were in the car together. He also attempted to intimidate her in a later incident. That trial was delayed to a later date. Brooks stated at the March 2023 hearing that if this case went to trial, he would represent himself again.
And that's one of those where you're like, come on. You didn't
let him do it. I mean, he's, you know, he's not doing himself any favors. Now, is it a drain on just tax dollars and the person that has to oversee that? Of course. Yeah. True. But I think if he, again, if like he's competent enough to do that, then that kind of weighs in the favor of like, well, then yes, he is competent enough to know right from wrong. And therefore all of these charges stand.
Yeah, true. And then that cuts against your appellate argument on the parade attack case. If you're now representing yourself in the domestic violence case, in the witness intimidation case, for sure.
Then in July of 2023, Brooks was set to go to trial on weapons charges. The second set of charges stemmed from an incident in which Brooks fired a gun at his nephew. Brooks told officers at the scene different stories. He tried blaming his own son, saying the young man was posing with the weapon on Snapchat. Then Brooks admitted he did fire the weapon, explaining to officers,
"I shot the gun at the ground. It was not intended for my nephew. It was not intended to harm or hurt anybody. It was intended to get my nephew's girlfriend the fuck away from my house." Sinister Hood will be right back.
Sinister Hood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way.
Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
I bet you've probably been to the doctor's office in the past few months. I bet you had to hand over personal info, like your insurance, your ID, maybe even your social security number. And I bet you weren't thinking about how your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal information. If any one of them isn't careful, it's a good bet they could accidentally expose your details to hackers and identity theft, putting you at risk. Fortunately, LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed or your money back, with plans covering up to $3 million for stolen funds and expenses. Don't take chances with your personal info. Help protect it even when it's out of your hands. Save up to 40% your first year with promo code IHEART. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Rather than go to trial, Brooks accepted a plea deal with help from an attorney in the public defender's office. He pleaded guilty to one count of possessing a firearm as a convicted felon. The state dismissed two felony charges for recklessly endangering safety because they couldn't locate or get the cooperation of the victims. Brooks showed remorse, saying,
"I just want to take responsibility for the mistake I made that day."
Judge David Feist mentioned the parade attack when he sentenced Brooks to 2 years in prison plus 2 years of probation to run concurrently with his existing sentence, saying,
"There's nothing I'm going to do that's going to materially impact your situation."
I mean, yeah, you're just adding
drops to the bucket.
Stacking him up. Yeah, I mean, he still needs to be held accountable, and it gives the victims of that situation some semblance of justice, I hope. But, I mean, he's in prison for the rest of his life. He can keep getting things stacked up, but that's where he's going to die.
Yeah, and what really struck me was that it was a simple case where it sounds kind of like a familial dispute and he got pissed off and discharged a firearm. And to make a statement in court for something that is that minute to be like, "I really want to take responsibility for what I did that day." But then for another situation where he's 100% he did it, which is the parade attack, to how he disrespectfully acted that way, it's just such a juxtaposition.
Mm-hmm. It's bizarre. Yeah.
Yeah.
For the remaining case in Milwaukee related to injuries to the mother of his child, Brooks finally accepted the help of an attorney in January of 2024. The trial was scheduled for May. On May 6th of 2024, he entered a plea of no contest to count one of felony intimidation of a victim. By pleading no contest, Brooks was able to accept a conviction without admitting guilt. When he appeared in court, Brooks was accompanied by his attorney and sitting in a wheelchair. Court officials said the wheelchair was a safety measure and not as a result of illness or injury. The court found Brooks guilty and dropped the other charges. The state asked for Brooks to be sentenced to
a substantial term
in the Wisconsin state prison system. A sentencing hearing is scheduled for August of 2024.
And when I first saw him in that wheelchair, I thought, what happened to him? But I guess because of how boisterous, jumping up and down, everything he was at the parade trial, that it's, if
was
you're
he
shackled.
Shackled to the wheelchair?
I couldn't see. I could only see, there was a live feed of it. So you can really only see him from like about the chest up, and he's just like in a wheelchair. But I wonder if that's what it is that they have you shackled so they can roll you in and roll you out, and you basically can't run off or jump or hit anybody. But wow. I couldn't see if he was shackled to it. But at first I wondered if he was having like health issues or something like that. But I guess the reporters asked and he was not. So
that's bizarre that you wouldn't have him shackled, walk him to a chair in there, and then just like handcuff him or ankle cuff him to the chair. Yeah. Maybe there's some more, they have some kind of control better in a wheelchair.
Yeah, maybe so. Or because he is an extreme, extreme, extreme case of how, and you saw what happened in that Las Vegas courtroom with that defendant jumping over and jumping at the judge, that because he had to have been removed from the first trial, you know, from the parade attack trial, they might have thought, you know, we're not taking any chances. We'll roll him in and roll him out. But we'll keep an eye out for August of 2024. But it's kind of like Judge Feist said, if like, it's not really going to materially change anything. But again, if there is some sort of appellate window or something that would get him released from prison on the parade attack charges, I doubt that would happen. At least you would still have these other sentences that he would still have to serve.
The parade attack case is still pending appeal. In April of 2024, appellate attorney Michael Covey asked the court for more time to prepare the appeal. The trial transcripts were ready in November of 2023, but Covey did not receive them for several additional weeks. District Attorney Sue Opper called the request
very commonplace
and had no reaction. Covey asked to extend the deadline to June 28th. The request is pending.
I assume he'll get that the judge will let him have more time. It's a huge record to have to go through, and I'm sure a huge mess. And he said that in his request to the judge of like, there's a lot here. It's like 76 different counts. I have to make sure, as an appellate attorney, you have to certify to the court, yes, I checked every possible avenue on every possible charge. So that means knowing the elements of every charge and then going through and making sure that the state proved the element of every charge and there were no anything reversible that maybe Brooks had objected to properly, maybe just like accidentally objected to something, right?
This is one of those times where I'm like, if I was this guy,
yeah,
I might just be like, there's nothing. I mean, how can,
like,
it must
great.
Be so hard for him to go through knowing what his client did and look for a reason to maybe help him get out of prison or get a lesser sentence, knowing what he did. That's the tough one.
No, it definitely is. And from what I understand, Covey is a well-regarded private attorney who's getting paid public defender rates. Like, the state will pay a highly specialized attorney, not like their $1,000 an hour, whatever they make, but the same rate that they would compensate a public defender, but so that the defendant or the appellant here has a competent counsel. Because a couple of Wisconsin attorneys were like, there's probably like a handful of attorneys that are qualified in the state to even handle this appeal, because it is, it's so many charges and such a messy underlying record. So I hope that for our sake, for justice's sake, that this attorney is super thorough, does a super great job, and there is nothing appealable.
Mm-hmm. While Brooks continues to weave his way through the Wisconsin legal system, dozens of families are left picking up the pieces. One of those families sued Brooks in late 2023, as well as their insurance company, alleging that his attack caused them
to suffer extreme emotional distress, panic attacks, sleep deprivation, post-traumatic stress disorder, anxiety, depression, and other damages.
The family was standing along the parade route when the SUV barreled toward them. The mother of the family pulled her children out of harm's way. The entire family witnessed what they called
the carnage
of the day, including deaths in front of them. They ran for cover in a nearby cafe. The suit seeks compensation for past and future pain, past wage loss, past and future medical expenses, and future earning capacity. The case is pending.
And it may be that as part of their suit, they have to sue him in addition to be able to sue their insurance company. It's almost like an uninsured driver getting into an incident with an uninsured driver where your insurance company is actually paying you for the losses. But I think everybody is entitled to compensation from this guy for sure.
Yeah, I think, I mean, unfortunately, it costs money to hire an attorney mm-hmm. and sue people, but I would love to see a lot of lawyers reach out to people that do need representation and take it pro bono and mm-hmm. help people like this in this situation. Or like, just, I don't know. Can the court ever just be like, everyone there is entitled to something. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the way it works, just not everyone is going to get that.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, most states have crime victim compensation funds where you can make a claim for damages as related to your, you know, most of the time it's in the sense of like a sexual assault and you want to move apartments that you live in. But in a situation like this, you maybe could ask for some compensation from the state fund. But you're right. I think it is over, above, and beyond what even those limits are. And, you know, not like any amount of money is ever going to help, but it would certainly help pay for therapy, physical mm-hmm. therapy, you know, things that, like we said earlier, the ripple effect that lasts well beyond the initial harm that's going to come up every November 21st forever.
Mm-hmm. On May 8th, 2024, the city of Waukesha broke ground on a memorial for the victims and survivors of the parade attack. A fundraising effort began in January of 2022 for the new memorial at Greed Park that will include benches, sculptures, and a tile wall. It is meant to be a place for the community to both heal and remember. At the groundbreaking, Mayor Sean Riley said,
"We as a community are and continue to be Waukesha strong."
Donna Kalig and several members of the Dancing Grannies were present as well. WISN News asked one Dancing Granny, Jan Kwiatkowski, what emotions the memorial evoked. She said,
"I don't know if I'd exactly call it peace, but coming to a closure, a place where we can still gather and remember."
Construction has begun and is expected to wrap by this fall. The dedication ceremony is scheduled for November 21st, 2024, on the 3-year anniversary of the tragedy. So what do we think?
Well, I'm glad they're getting a memorial. It was really, you know, seeing those two Dancing Grannies like together. And when, you know, she said that in the interview, she didn't even sound like sad, or she just sounded like resigned. You know, it's kind of like you want to have a place where you can remember those people that you love. But when they were taken in such a violent way and in such a, especially for a town who it was in the place where their parade is every year, you know, all have to. You know, so hopefully the following parades that have happened and now once this memorial has opened, it becomes more like we're taking the memory of our downtown back to we're a community that loves and is strong and not letting this person who took so many lives and affected and impacted so many bystanders' lives, we're not going to let him control the narrative anymore. And we're not going to let him control our feelings on this anymore. You know, we were mad about the trial, but he's locked up and gone for at least 700 more years. So now the next thing is how can we remember these folks? And the plans for it look beautiful. There's, you know, of course, a lot of sculpture and garden, but I think a tile wall, you know, somewhere where it'll have their names and a place where mm-hmm. where people can go and have that silent reflection of getting that closure and say their, you know, be able to say their names and celebrate the lives of who they were.
Molly said that too in her Freaky Friday submission, that every year the town, like the parade, just gets kind of bigger and it's mm-hmm. the community comes together even more each year, and the safety measures have increased each year. And instead of letting something this tragic, mm-hmm. you know, do away with this forever, mm-hmm. they really came together and are honoring all of the victims while still continuing to grow as a community to say, like, we're not going to let you ruin this for us every year. We're going to take it back. And good for all of you.
Good for all of you, and good riddance to him. Like I said, I hope the appellate attorney checks every box and says this is airtight, and then he can just go away. And if he does, like I said, make any money off of it, I hope it doesn't do anything to make him look good. It does nothing but compensate the victims.
It all goes to the victims.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Compensate the victims for what happened and show him for the monster that he was, both the monster he was on the day on November 21st and the monster he was at the trial thereafter, for sure. Mm-hmm. But thank you to Molly. Thanks to everybody who has commented on the minisode that was from Waukesha or has emailed us. And I think the mayor really summed it up at the ceremony. The community are and continue to be mm-hmm. Waukesha strong. And when things
That's
like
what
that
Molly
happen,
said too in hers is that, you know, they really do embody that motto of mm-hmm. Waukesha strong.
That's the update. We'll keep you updated if we hear anything else on the appeal. It sounds like mm-hmm. June 28th is a key date, as well as August for that other sentencing, but it's going to be a drop in the bucket. So I think the appeal is what we'll be looking at. But until then, I hope everybody in Waukesha remains Waukesha strong.
Remains Waukesha strong. Well, if you like our free episodes, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next or dive into over 800 hours of bonus content. We even give you a free archive bonus content just for signing up for free once a month. So you can see what that's all about. Or if you want even more, you can join at one of the tiers. We got all sorts of stuff you get. You get ad-free episodes, monthly live stream Q&As, a quarterly live bonus content, weekly audio bonus content, monthly minisodes, merch discounts, and the most important thing, mm-hmm. what is that?
The community of the most amazing and best listeners on the whole entire internet.
Yes. And if you're not wanting to commit right away to a tier, what can they do?
Try a free trial. It's where you sign up for any of our tiers and get all the perks for a full week and cancel anytime before the trial is over without getting charged. So if you want to check out some minisodes, some bonus content, look at some live stream replays, you can binge as much as you want for a week or stick around, get an annual membership, and you get a month free when you sign up for a year. So that might be a good deal too. So you get 1 week and 1 month free.
Stack them up. Mm-hmm. And for recent patrons, thank you so much for supporting the show, and make sure you stick around after our sign-offs to hear your shout-out.
Don't forget to head over to sinisterhood.com and click shop on the top banner to check out all of our merch, including t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos. And we have clearance. Don't forget to use your Patreon discount.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show. We make it super simple to give us a review. You can follow us on socials and check out the episode description for sources used during our research. You'll also find fun things like topic-based playlists and links to all those live show tickets for the Full Moon Energy Tour.
Yeah, we can't wait to see y'all on the road. And you can follow all of our travel and fun over on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Check out video episodes and clips from other stuff on our YouTube channel and our TikTok at Sinisterhood Podcast, and order custom video shout outs for you or someone you love at cameo.com/sinisterhood. We can deliver any message like I love you, happy birthday, happy anniversary, happy Father's Day is coming up over on Cameo. Christy, where are you at on the internet?
I am on Instagram and Threads at Christy and Wallace and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather, what about you?
I'm on the internet at Heather versus the world.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for supporting the show on Patreon. Here are your special Patreon shout-outs. Kenzie Watts.
Katie Swintz.
C. Shivel.
Madison Rotary.
Izzy Marie.
Miranda Shavaria.
Caitlin Japixie.
Brittany Zins.
Velox Incident.
Jennifer Martin.
Tennessee.
Debbie Inkley.
Becca.
Ashley Colpit.
Nikki Volt.
Kat.
Jensen B.
Charlie Liss.
And Terry Nunn.
Thank you so much for supporting the show. We could not do this without you. We sincerely love and appreciate every single one of you. We hope we pronounced your names correctly. Stay safe, stay healthy, and keep it creepy.
Bye.
Sinister.
chances are you've been to the doctor recently, and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your social security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info. And if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow and Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.